If you had a chance to talk to a billionaire or five billionaires or 20 billionaires, what would you ask them? Now, let's say maybe even it's not a billionaire. Let's say it's someone who's worth $10 million or $100 million or $20 million. What would you ask them? Well, you guys have the opportunity to listen in on a conversation today on this episode of the Carrot Cast. It's not me. It's not me interviewing anyone. It's actually an interview that I heard several years back. I saved it on my computer, and we have permission from the original author to republish it here, their conversation here. And I've listened to it probably 5, 6, 7 times over the years because it's meant so much to me. And basically what I got out of this interview was this gentleman named Yannick Silver, great entrepreneur, interviewed a guy named Rick Sapio. And Rick had a chance to sit down with 10, 15, 20 billionaires or mega millionaires to find out kind of their secrets. You know, what are their secrets of life? Not just their secrets to make more money, because as you guys know, entrepreneurship and life is not all about money. Money amplifies who you already are. So what are these billionaires doing to live amazing lives? What are these billionaires doing to take it to the next level, from, you know, to separate themselves from just the average millionaire, let's say? There's very specific things they do. And one of the things I got so much out of this call is the way that billionaires do things very, very differently in their lives, but they're very simple things than most of us do. One of the things that made a massive impact on me several years ago when I heard this is this: that billionaires and really successful people live their life in seasons. Now, they're going to talk about what that means in this episode of the Carrot Cast. Billionaires also, they tend to own businesses, not run businesses. Now, what does that mean? Same thing. We're going to dive into that on this episode of the Carrot Cast. So if you want to sharpen your mindset, if you want to hone your mindset and adopt some of the things that mega billionaires or millionaires do in their lives, this is going to be the episode for you. Like I said, it's definitely a departure from our normal Carrot Cast, where I'm not the guy doing the interviewing. So the audio quality isn't going to be perfect. You guys are just going to have to bear with us on that. But I really think you're going to enjoy this episode in a big way. And hopefully it means as much to you as it has meant to me. So dive into this episode of the Carrot Cast. It's a replay of a podcast done several years ago with my mentor and really experienced investor, he probably invests, but really experienced entrepreneur, Yannick Silver. Yannick, take it away.
Welcome, everyone, to a very special call that I'm doing with my buddy Rick Sapio, and it's all about billionaire secrets. And I'll let Rick fill in a few details on his bio in just a minute, but where Rick and I really met and bonded was actually on the private island of one such billionaire, which is Sir Richard Branson on Necker Island. I think it was about 4, maybe 5 years ago. And so Rick and I were always out late, enjoying the island, enjoying a lot of fun times. And we both actually ended up having a letter given to us at one of the last dinners that essentially said, mine said Mr. Silver, I'm sure yours said Mr. Sapio, and it said, hope you enjoyed the time on this island. It's, one of the world's most exclusive islands, and some of your behavior has resulted in guests having less than optimal experience, and we, you can carry on as you wish on another island, and please have your bags packed by 8 p.m. So Rick and I have one of the distinctions of being one of the few people to be kicked off Necker Island as part of a joke that our mutual friend Joe Polish and Richard helped organize, which was nice. I remember handing the letter to Richard, and he looks at it, he's like, yeah, you know, the manager's a bit of a serious bloke, but I'll have a word with him. And that's when I was like, oh, shit, maybe for real. So it took about 15 seconds. He's like, ah, I got you guys. So that was a good time, and that was, an interesting way of spending time with the billionaire. And now, Rick's official bio, Rick's one of those business people that I really look up to, who started multiple businesses, has a holding company that has a lot of different companies, from real estate to private funds to even publicly traded mutual funds, healthcare, medical device companies. And he's been at this a while. Starting in the financial sector and then building up his own kind of portfolio of companies. And he's also been president of Dallas Chapter of Entrepreneurs Organization, EO, president of Dallas Roundtable, a member of YPO, all sorts of things. Chairman of Gathering of Titans, where Rick, you brought me in to speak at one point with a great group of entrepreneurs. Anything else that we should know about from your background there?
I think that you nailed it. One thing I always like to add when people ask is we spend a lot of time making sure that our kids have a life of luxury, in a sense. We don't want them to have any hurt feelings. We don't want them to go through any drama or chaos or negative trauma, you know, traumatizing situations, etc. But I think one of the reasons why I am who I am is when I was 11, one of nine kids, and my father came home to tell the family that he had cancer, and he was given 6 weeks to live. And he ended up living for two more years, but he died when I was 13, and he gave us a gift just before he died, and that was he went bankrupt. And due to all that we went through, my mother had a very, very serious nervous breakdown. So we went from, you know, normal American family, dinner on the table every night, to no parents. And had that not happened to me, I would never have become an entrepreneur, because we really banded together as a family. I started my first small business when I was 13. And I think it's incredibly important that we teach our kids how to be entrepreneurial, how to make money, how to save money, how to invest money. We need to teach them to fail often and pick themselves back up. So that's a part of my bio I'm proud of. And it's funny, when that happened to us, this was, I'm 48, so that was 37 years ago, when he got cancer. It's an interesting thing to watch now, that all my siblings, even, I've got 37 nieces and nephews, and they do the same thing in terms of they protect their kids from everything. And I try to explain to them that the reason we are who we are is because of what we went through. So I wanted to share that. There was something else I wanted to share, but it got lost in that story somewhere. But the point is this. I believe that the way for us out of the crisis we're in as a country and as a world is through entrepreneurship. And I'm going to keep tooting that horn. So that's it. So where do you want to get started?
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. Well, let's talk about what took you on this journey to kind of meet and interact with. Now it's, I think, the number is up to 20 billionaires. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'll chime in with I've had the privilege of spending some time with a couple of them, aside from Richard, on a bit of an extended period of time. I think, you know, the quote that you, one of your values that, you know, you've always, you know, I've talked about, you know, it comes up in conversations a lot with you, is this idea of simplicity. And there's a great quote on that you abide by, which is, I want to give a fig for the simplicity on this side of complexity, but I would give my life for the simplicity on the other side of complexity. And that's by Oliver Wendell Holmes. And that's been a recurring theme in your life. And, you know, maybe, so let's start there, maybe what your journey has been, how you interacted and why you decided to spend time with these 20-some billionaires, and then how this idea of simplicity has found itself woven in with some of the lessons that you found.
All right, well, let me start with what you ended with. And so first, this presentation that we're talking about is called Lessons from the Billionaire Mind. And when we talk about simplicity, it's important to understand that the average entrepreneur that I meet, or would-be entrepreneur, they think of a business idea, they get into this gotta mode, gotta get a website, gotta hire somebody, gotta get an office, gotta. But when I was with these billionaires and I spent serious time with them, I never saw any of that. In fact, I saw them on the other side of simplicity. You've got a guy like Warren Buffett with 90,000 employees. 90,000 employees, and he reads for 9 hours a day. You spent a lot of time with Branson, as have I. Here's a guy with tens of thousands of employees. I don't know what the count is. And he's sipping champagne on an island, you know, 9 hours from civilization. These are people that have realized that true success is on the other side of simplicity. So there, if you will, there's the simple side of simplicity, and there's the far side of simplicity. people need to realize that in order to get to the far side of simplicity, they have to understand some critical principles about it. And that is, number one, your life has to be on purpose. It makes me sick to my stomach when I talk to someone who's 40 years old. I ask them what their purpose is, and they say, I don't know. So if you haven't taken time out of your life, I don't care if it takes you 10 minutes, 1 week, 2 years, or 5 years, go somewhere, figure out what your purpose is, and then come back and execute on it. That will get you to simplicity faster than anything. But your original question was, how did this all evolve? And it's funny, if you want something bad enough, the universe will conspire to give it to you. How this all started was, a friend of mine, and I live in Dallas, asked me to help get Rudy Giuliani in the White House. And I know nothing about politics, and since that experience, I actually hate politics. But my wife and I got involved. We ended up raising a lot of money for the campaign to nowhere. But when he was 20 points ahead of McCain, we had a fundraiser at our home, and Rudy came over, and it was a great event. I had a lot of fun. I got to hang out with him and Rick Perry and other people that were big donors. Well, little did we know at the time that we had raised, I think, the second most amount of money in this particular period of time. So I get this call from the first billionaire, T. Boone Pickens, and he says, listen, I don't know if you know, but I have a need to get Rudy Giuliani in the White House. Thank you for raising the money. I had a prize out there. Anybody who raises over X, I will take hunting with me on my lodge, at my lodge. So I did some research on his lodge. It turns out he has a $300 million house on a 66,000-acre ranch. And I said, Mr. Pickens, thank you so much, all due respect, but I can't go because my wife's about to have a baby next week, and the baby would be like 3 or 4 days old. And I don't share this part of the story often, but went home, told my wife the story, and she said, are you nuts? You better go. So we had the baby. It ended up being 4 days later. My house was filled with in-laws. And so it was a good time to go for 3 days and hang out with Pickens, an unbelievably giving guy. So I spent 4 days with the guy that George W. called a few times. Mike Milken's calling him. He's setting world policy. I mean, it was amazing how powerful the guy was. I got to pick his brains. And then when I got back, this was December of 07, New Year's was around the corner. My wife and I were getting together. And she said, you came back from that trip on a high. Why don't you meet 10 billionaires this year? So it started there. And like I said, if you want something bad enough, it will happen. So the first or second week of January in 08, I went to a charity event here in Dallas. And it just so happened that in my mind, I remembered this thing on the radio I'd heard that to have lunch with Warren Buffett cost $500,000. There's a charity event. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I think it's auctioned off every year, maybe on eBay or something like that.
Yeah. So I go to this big charity event, and there it was in the corner. It said, have lunch with a billionaire. There were four billionaires' names there, and I put my name next to each one, and the prices were really low. The starting price was, I think, $250. I can't remember. So rather than sit there and wait to make sure I was the final bid, I just handed my credit card to the organizer, and I said, whatever the highest bid is on these four guys, call me tomorrow and charge my card. So I was real nervous when the call came in. And I think you know the story. But to have lunch with four separate billionaires, it was only $1,500. Crazy. People were bidding on cowboy tickets and private jet trips. But to me, the most valuable thing is sitting across from a billionaire. So it went from Boone Pickens to those four, and those were Ray Hunt, Phil Romano, Craig Hall, Sam Wiley. And then I get an email from Joe about the Richard Branson trip. So it just started unfolding from there. Of course, I always go to the Warren Buffett Berkshire meeting. I met Warren Buffett before, but now I saw him in a new light. If you haven't been to the annual meeting of Berkshire Hathaway, it's this coming Saturday. Where else will you get two billionaires answering questions for 6 hours? It's just incredible. So it just went on from there. That's how it evolved. And once it happened, I decided to commit money. and time to meeting as many as I could. And I'll wrap up the story by saying, I think it ended up being 30 total people because I switched. I went from billionaire to people who have had a billionaire impact. And so I spent time with Stephen Covey. I spent time with Brother David, a guy named Ken Wilber, Ajashanti. I think you were there, too, when we met the Dalai Lama.
Were I you... wasn't, no, but I wish I was.
Oh, that was incredible. So spent the day there, got to spend about 4 hours in his presence in a small group. So it just went on from there. I almost got to the point now where people were emailing me. I've got this billionaire cousin, uncle, friend. You want to meet him? And I was like, no, I've met enough billionaires. And what I realized is they have some certain attributes. And once I found the attributes, I was done.
Yeah, well, let's dig in a little bit. What are some of the key ones to start where what you found?
Yeah. So we could start with kind of the softer things, and I call it the three G's. And the first G is graciousness. I have to tell you, in all the meetings I had, and there was a lot of meetings, a lot of one-on-one time, I never saw a cell phone. I never saw somebody in a hurry. I never saw somebody who wasn't fully present to me. So the first G is graciousness. I found that they were extremely gracious all the way around. And, you know, what you have to be asking yourself if you're listening to this is, did they become a billionaire first, or did they have these traits first? And I believe that they had these traits first. You have to be fully present in order to be fully successful, in my opinion. And so graciousness is all about respect for humanity, respect for the world, respect for yourself, etc. The second G is gratefulness. Unless you're truly grateful for what you have, no matter where you are, you could be the poorest person in the world. But until you understand gratefulness, I don't think you can get there. Brother David, who wrote a book called Gratefulness, who was one of the people that I met, and he's clearly a billionaire in the spiritual world. He said there's this continuum. On one side is this serving ego, where you get up in the morning and you look to serve the world. That would be somebody fully serving, like Mother Teresa. And I'm not asking anybody to be Mother Teresa. But on the complete opposite end is the selfish ego. And everybody resides somewhere on that continuum, from serving to selfish. And I found that most of these people had serving egos. If you think about somebody like Bill Gates, people say, you know, the guy has a lot of money and he set out to make a lot of money. And the truth is he didn't. And here's a guy who slept next to his desk for years. And I just spent some time with Ross Perot, and he told the story about him offering $100 million to Bill Gates before they were a big company. And Bill Gates said, no, I don't want your money. This isn't about the money. If it was about the money, he would have taken $100 million. You know what I mean? So that's what gratefulness is all about. And then the last G is generosity. I read the book Titan. It's about John D. Rockefeller. And from the day he got his first check at 16, 10% went to charity or to a cause or his church. And so they understand how that money flows that way. And there's been a lot of books about the spirituality of money. So they all are extremely generous. And again, same thing. Were they generous first or were they billionaires first? I think they were generous first. So the three G's was profound. And I noticed it across the board. Now, people have said back to me, well, I don't think all billionaires have the three G's. And I respond, you're absolutely right. But the ones that I met had that. And so I think I was attracting what I wanted to see in the world, in a sense.
Right. You know, it's interesting. So you know, we had, for one of our Maverick trips, we brought in Jean-Paul DeJorio, who is on the Forbes 500 list for top wealthiest American, or I think worldwide, and co-founder of Patron Tequila, co-founder of Jean-Paul Mitchell hair care products. People have probably seen him in commercials and cameos and different things. And he, you know, he totally represents those three G's, and it's just amazing when you spend time with them. They're like, it was almost like this Zen-like presence that when you're with JP, it's just it was really fascinating, and I think you're absolutely right that they have to have had those first. And I've always had this saying, Rick, where I think money amplifies who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're a complete sort of jackass, you know, very selfish, kind of scarcity-minded person, you know, the money is only going to let you become much more of that jackass jerk because it gives you more possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're generous and you have each of these three G's, it gives you more ways to expand that generosity and abundance and so forth. And so that's really fascinating to me.
I like that. Whoever you are, expands. So they would be exponential jackasses.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there's certainly good natured jackasses, and then there's people that are really just complete jerks.
Yeah.
All right. So
the other thing, and I could rattle through. I could do it any way you want. There's a lot of common attributes of the ones that I met. So how do you want to do it?
Yeah. Well, you know, just any way that you feel good about what really jumps out at you next as something that.
All right. The second thing I noticed is that, and this is something that I didn't notice till later. Oftentimes I would think back to what I learned and what I could apply, and I want to talk about some things that I actually applied that weren't things that I learned directly, but I created some applications for what I learned, and it'll come together when I explain it. But this is something that I noticed, that they live their life in seasons. So the only way to explain this is to talk about the typical entrepreneur. Is always have the they always have their foot on the gas. It's always time to plant. They're always planting and planting and planting. But if you think about truly successful people, they have a spring, summer, winter, fall. Spring, summer, fall, winter schedule. They know when to plant. They know when to cultivate. They know when to harvest, and they know when to rest. And all of them had a retreat. Interestingly, all of them had a retreat early in life. So I'm going to keep revisiting this, that they had these traits early on. So you think about a guy like Branson, who we both spent time with. I mean, here's a guy that bought this island when he was very young.
Yeah.
And realized that if he's going to have a life that aligns with his vision, he had to be away from the rat race. They all thought that way. And this is a tough one for me because I love what I do. For many, many years, my office building was very close to my home. I just recently moved 3 miles away. For simplicity's sake, I'm still 3 miles away. I don't like commuting. I think commuting is asinine. I've never figured out how that works, to sit in a car for, 2 hours a day, but people do it. So the point is, I have not embraced this retreat thing, but I did notice it across the board. And oftentimes, it was a long journey to get to their retreat center. It wasn't like a shore house an hour away. Oftentimes, it was another country or at least several states away, which I found interesting.
Hmm. Let me add something to that, which I think is kind of cool, is Rich DeVos, who's the co-founder of Amway, owner of the Orlando Magic. And one of my friends, Rich is his mentor, Frank McKinney, and so Frank brought Rich into a very small outing that we had, and Rich talked about that he bought this huge yacht for that very purpose. And what's interesting, and Ricky, I know your family is a huge value for you, is that they combined it with family. So they said that we would bring our kids, and then the kids could bring their friends, and then they couldn't get off the yacht, and that meant that they would have to spend time with them. And same thing on Necker. Is Richard talked about how his kids would bring their friends to Necker, and it's the same deal, as a concentrated family time as well as a retreat. And I found that really interesting.
Mm-hmm. So, but you think about too, when it comes to seasons. So we talked mainly in the last section about the resting part, but you have to know where you are at any point. Meaning, are you harvesting? Are you planting? Are you cultivating? And I think too often with most entrepreneurs that I encounter, they're just always in plant mode, if that makes any sense. They don't realize that you have to then shift to harvest at a certain point. And for me, as an investor, I have often missed. I've had opportunities to sell investments for a lot of money and missed many times, which is part of my learning process. So I've had to learn the hard way that it's important to have all four seasons in your career.
Do you see that, Rick? Like, do you see that throughout 1 year, or do you see it as like multi-year? You know, a couple years are planting, a couple years are harvesting.
Oh, I think it's throughout the year. It's just like regular seasons. There's a natural order of things. So you can have multiple projects going on at the same time. But for you as a human being, I think every year you need to figure out when your winter is. When are you just going to fold up your tent and relax? I just read an article about Jeff Bezos. I don't know him at all, but he goes away by himself and gets a hotel room somewhere. He doesn't tell anybody where he is. And he just thinks with no electronics. So here's a guy that's wired in the electronic world, and yet since he started the company, I think he said once every 2 months. I can't remember. But it's very important to just shut down and tap into your inner drive and your purpose. Another thing I learned from these guys is that it takes the same or less effort to succeed at a small project as it does to succeed at a big one. And so if you're going to set out to work 80 hours a week or whatever it is you decide, or 4 hours a week, I have to throw that in, 4-hour work week. My point is, if you're going to set out to put effort into something, why not have it be something that has a massive outcome? And oftentimes I'll sit across the table from an entrepreneur. I had lunch with somebody today, and I'm thinking, even if you're successful, you will not move the needle on your finances or the world. So I'm very intrigued by social entrepreneurs. They move the needle in the world. So, you know, do something big, because it takes the same effort. And the reason why it takes the same effort, and that's what I learned from these guys, is when you set a stake in the ground for something really big, it creates a vacuum behind it. So when John F. Kennedy said, we're going to send a man to the moon and return him safely to Earth, even though he died, it still happened because it was so massive and it enrolled a lot of people. So the other thing they all had in common is the fact that they chose big things. Clearly, I mean, you don't end up a billionaire by accident. You want to comment? Because I have one other thing to add.
No, I was going to – I mean, I think that's a really – I mean, it's a great point. I mean, it's like, you know, the big things, and it's like serendipity takes hold, or whatever you want to call it, or you know, enough people get on this bandwagon that you've then created, and a big idea attracts people that are interested in being part of something bigger than themselves.
It's a huge distinction. It's huge. See, when you declare something so big, what you have to be is vulnerable, as if, I don't really know how we're going to do it.
Yeah.
But most of us, we declare things that we know how to do. So it forces you to get way outside your comfort zone. And this is one of the big, you know, hammers over the head for me. I'm starting to declare things much bigger than I know myself to be, and I was inspired by these guys. Here's another really big one that I just love telling this story. So through this process, Phil Romano became a very close friend and mentor. He's 73. He founded Romano's Macaroni Grill, Fuddruckers, Eatsy's, Cozy Mel, Rudy's Barbecue. He's the only entrepreneur that has three restaurant franchises, restaurants that have done more than $1 billion in revenue. Three. And that's crazy. He's also an investor, private equity, et cetera. And I'm having lunch with him. This was about 2 years ago now. And he says, you know a lot of people. I'm looking for somebody about your age to run a company that we're considering buying, and they need this resume. And he described the person. And he says, do you know anybody? And he was excited like a little kid about this concept he was pursuing. He's got a little kid's energy for an older guy. It's amazing to watch. Always excited about his next project. So about a month later, I have lunch with him about once a month. I said, Phil, what's going on with that project you were talking about? And he looks at me like he's puzzled. He goes, what project? I said, what do you mean, what project? You couldn't stop talking about it a month ago. And he looks me right in the eye and he says, the difference between a billionaire and a millionaire is this. If I don't find somebody to run it, I don't do it.
Wow.
I mean, that's massive. Because, like where we started, most entrepreneurs are gotta. His attitude is, I'm going to be on the far side of simplicity. And if I don't, from this far side, if I can't find somebody to run it, I'm not doing it. So really changed my view on business.
Well, you I mean, you've been doing this on your own level too. How did that affect what you do now with your holding company?
I've, since this project, it's really accelerated, but I've started to evolve into just owning and running opposed to running, and finding people to run the entities we invest in and compensating them both long-term and short-term for hitting objectives. To me, that's the only way. I mean, I don't think if you follow around the Forbes 400, 200 of them were lucky enough to come out of the right womb. But the other 200 that actually had to work, they worked early, but they knew these principles. They knew that if they weren't going to leverage through other people, it wasn't going to happen. The next thing I want to talk to you is pretty funny. It's more of a tactical thing.
Get a little more on this last one, because I think that's actually really huge, and I think it's all in the way that you think about it, and it ties back to, you know, thinking big versus thinking small and the projects and so forth. It's like, do you think that their thinking on that evolved and they all started as operators, or do you think that they really had enough elevation and altitude that they could say, yeah, this is, you know, the only way that it can really work?
That is an awesome question, and I'm glad you asked it. And before I answer it, I want to ask the people who are listening to it, whether you're listening to this live or you listen to it in a recorded way, I would like feedback on this interview. I'm very curious how it landed with you, if it was valuable, what value you found in it. So please give us feedback. Yannick and I thrive on it. We want to know if we're making an impact with you. So here's the thing, Yannick. It's so funny that you asked that question. I think that these people at a very early age understood leverage. They understand delegation. They may not have the skill yet, but they understood it. And you've read, and I've read, Richard Branson's book and many other entrepreneurs, and they all seem to understand that if I can't enroll people and if I don't have a good CEO or COO next to me, it's going to be a lot harder. And almost all of them did that early on. And I don't know if you remember, but Branson hired his first CEO. I think he called them a COO when he was 16 in his book. Who would have the presence of mind to do that? But if he didn't do that and didn't have that awareness, he would probably be, you know, in an island, a different type of island.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, it's like one way of thinking about it versus, you know, being the operator. And, you know, I wonder if sometimes it's like if their makeup is that they are much more of a generalist, and that it forced them to be, you know, to have to have delegation and bring in the person to operate their companies, because if you're really, really good at something, then a lot of times you end up being stuck there. Like if you're really great, from my point, I was a really good copywriter, and I'm trying to move away from that being my kind of sticking point in the businesses.
Well, it's funny because all of the things I learned from billionaires actually evolved into something called Business Finishing School. And Business Finishing School is, I've created modules to teach this stuff. But one of the modules is called the Superman Syndrome. And the Superman Syndrome is most entrepreneurs, if you're a copywriter, or you were, they start a business and they're Superman. And the billionaires were the opposite of that. What I mean by they're Superman is all roads lead to Superman. If a small company, all decisions go through you. Your employees are kind of in the dark because they have to wait till Superman's there to make a decision. All of the vendors, all of the clients, they have to deal with Superman. And Superman-oriented companies typically have the founder's name on the door. But the problem is Superman never made any money. And there's a great Crash Dummies song by that title, Superman Never Made Any Money. When you are Superman, you're the opposite of billionaire mind. But most small entrepreneurs think, yes, I am the person that all decisions have to go through. They don't even realize that their ego is running the show, which goes back to that selfish versus serving ego. This is all deep stuff. I mean, nothing that we've talked about is surface. This is deep, which is why I want your feedback. But if you could understand that Superman drive and get it out of your life, and think about yourself as at service to your employees and at service to your vendors and at service to your clients totally changes the game.
By the way, where can people find that information on Business Finishing School?
Just go to businessfinishingschool.com. It's a monthly program. We've put it in video modules. Very simple. What we found is that the average revenue increase top line is 50% in the first 6 months of doing the program. So it's been fun for me to do this. Actually, a mutual friend of ours, Patrick Gentempo, he said, Rick, you teach these principles inside your company. Why don't you teach them outside your company? And I said, oh, I don't want to do that stuff. It's not me. And he got me in a studio and pulled it out, and it's been a lot of fun. It's been a 2-year project. So if you want to learn more about all of this, just go there.
It's a very cool thing and something that you never expected to teach, and it's something that is grossly underpriced because you're not really in it to make it this windfall for yourself, but to really impact other entrepreneurs.
Yeah, so well, let me tell you, thank you for bringing that up too, because from this project, I realized that my purpose in life, I've now embraced it for 4 years, is to inspire entrepreneurship. And when I look at the world, I envision a world with a successful entrepreneur in every family. So if we could have a successful entrepreneur in every family, we wouldn't have all these political and entitlement issues that we have. Amen. And so that's my mission right now, and that's why I'm on the phone with you. I want as many people as possible to beat this drum of entrepreneurship.
Love it. Okay, what else is on the hit list here?
Okay, so the next thing I want to talk about is I'm in a restaurant with Charles Wiley. And Charles Wiley is an unbelievable guy. Him and his brother Sam had sold 6 companies for more than $1 billion in profit. It's crazy. And they had humble beginnings. I think they grew up in Louisiana. So he was one of the people that I met from the lunch, you know, have lunch with a billionaire. And I ended up having a 3-hour lunch with the guy, and he was about 70 at the time, and he was pretty much done. He had committed his life to philanthropy. He recently passed away in a car wreck, of all things, in Colorado. But anyway, I'll never forget, I'm sitting there, and I said, Charles, all right, let's cut all the crap. Tell me what's your secret. I mean, how does a guy do what you do? And he thought about it for a while, and he leans forward, and he looked both ways. And, you know, it was as if he was going to tell me about the Holy Scrolls. And he says, here's the secret. So if you're listening on the phone, just get a pen, and I'm going to tell you the secret. Actually, I changed my mind. Join the program, and I'll tell you the secret. No, I'll tell you the secret. There's actually many secrets that I learned, but this is what he said, which I found unbelievable and simple. He said, I didn't know what to talk to my employees about. You know, you pass them in the hallway, I'm the owner, they're the employee. I didn't know what to talk to them about. So I decided that every employee in every company that I had, in order to work for the company, they had to have in their pocket at all times a card. And the card said the company's top 5 objectives for the quarter and their individual top 5 objectives. I'm like, wow, that is incredible. Think about a culture in a company where everybody knows exactly what they need to get done, that their boss is going to ask them about it, and they know what the company needs to get done. Talk about complete and total alignment. Wow. And I know there's a big push out there. I think his name is Daniel Pink, and others have written about the fact that, you know, objectives really aren't what they're meant to be. I think that is total and complete nonsense. If an employee doesn't know what the company's objectives are, how can they be fully engaged? If they don't know what their objectives are, how can they be fully engaged? So that was one secret. I incorporated it immediately. We had always followed management by objectives, but this took it to another level. So now when your employees, you know, they go home from work and they're complaining to their spouse about, you know, my boss is this or my company's that, the conversation shifts. Now the spouse is saying, hey, let's look at your objectives. How can I help you get them done? Because when you get them done, you get bonused. And so you create more team that way.
Interesting. You know, that brings up an interesting question about questions. Like when you're sitting at lunch or spending time with these billionaires, what do you think has been the best one or two questions that you've asked, or you know, maybe that people that are listening or reading transcript later on can apply to other mentors or potential mentors that they meet?
One thing that I wanted to learn from all these guys is clearly they were all lifelong learners, and I think if somebody's on the phone, they're a lifelong learner. But I wanted to know what were they studying, and
at that moment, or
at that moment, yeah. And what I found from is that when you ask them what they're studying, they lit up like little kids. So they had a childlike enthusiasm about life and learning. And so I wanted to know, what are they learning, number one? And then the other thing I wanted to know is, what are they most proud of? When you ask people what they're most proud of, that's when they generally talk about a failure that they overcame. And then lastly, what I wanted to know is, what did they want their legacy to be? The thing that they all had in common is they were all, you know, older in general. I mean, the average age was probably 70.
Yeah.
And so what do you want your legacy to be? And that's when it really makes them think. So those are the questions that I asked. And then, you know, you sit down, you do some research. Here's another thing that you'll find interesting, I think, Yannick, and that is that they weren't as intimidating or bright, or they weren't as bright as I thought they would be. I don't mean bright in a negative or positive way. I mean they were simple people. They're very simple. You know, it wasn't what I expected. I would say the most intimidating of all of them would be T. Boone Pickens, and he was just intimidating because he was so intelligent. But he was a normal guy. He was humble. You know, we had breakfast, lunch, and dinner together. The guy was just a regular guy, but he was intense. He had an intensity about him. But other than him, I would say everybody was pretty normal. They knew what they wanted out of life. They set a plan to get it, and they executed on that plan. I'm sure there are some lucky billionaires. I didn't meet people like that. I met more intentional people.
Right. Great. Okay. So let's keep rolling here. What else stuck out at you?
Why don't we go for about 10 more minutes? Because whenever you go up to an hour, then we don't have time to wrap up. So here's another thing I learned. I'm not sure if you executed on this. I think I've talked to you about this. But the other thing I noticed that they all had in common, which I did execute on, and that is, every one of them had a lifetime assistant that was more of an accountability partner. And I like to say, hire a lifelong, committed, right-hand person with one responsibility, and that is keeping you focused on your objectives and keeping people and things out of your life that don't belong there. So it's not someone to make plane reservations and all that. It's someone whose sole responsibility is for you to achieve your objectives. And people have said to me, well, how do I afford that person? And the ironic thing about that question is, all of these guys realized this early on in life and had their lifetime assistant early. Now, lifetime assistant doesn't mean they have to be with you 40 years, although I calculated that the average billionaire had the same assistant for 20 years. So what it means is that you understand that you need an accountability partner. That's what it means. So when I set out to hire Christy, the ad said lifetime assistant. I wanted somebody walking into the interview with the right mindset. So, you know, normally we hire an assistant and we say, you know, if you're really good, you can move up to marketing. That's nonsense. I want somebody whose mindset is all about service and that they love doing it. Just like, you know, people like Dan Sullivan say, there is somebody to fill every role in the world, and that's their purpose. So no matter how much you make, even if you're making minimum wage, I think an important thing for you to do is find that lifetime assistant that's going to hold you accountable. If you ever go out to Hollywood, and I've seen these stars walking around, they've got, you know, five people handling their every need. And if you ask that person, are you satisfied, you know, carrying Sylvester Stallone's luggage? I actually met that person, and they love it. That's what they want to do. So, you know, there's always somebody that can help you do that. So I think it's important for you to create that job description for a lifetime assistant for you and an accountability partner for you, and refer to them as, you know, it was funny when I first met Branson's person, I said, who's that? And he said, that's my CEO. he makes them feel that way. So,
what are some tips on finding that person, you think, Rick?
Well, for me, I made them jump through hoops. I've actually created a module on this. I call it the 5200% rule. And the reason I call it that is because there was a study that was written about years ago that I remember reading. Microsoft is one of the hardest companies to get a job at, used to be. And the reason is because Bill Gates actually realized that the difference between the profit contribution of an average employee and a top 1% employee, the difference in profit contribution, you know, most people think it's 30%, 40%. Well, now you know the answer. It's 5,200%. And so I wanted to find what I call a 5,200 percenter. And so I made a lot of hoops to jump through. So how did I find it? I went to all of the assistants that I had met that I respected. And I basically said, here's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for you with these attributes. And so if it was coming from someone who was, in this case, I found Christy through Phil Romano's assistant. But I started there. And so I think it's very important. If you want to find somebody, go to somebody that's already successful in that position because they know exactly how to explain it. But I made them jump through hoops. I got 52 resumes. I sent an email to all of them, and I said, it's very simple. I'm looking for this type of person. Please download this book or buy this book and do a book report on it and send it back to me. And the book report was on a book called Managing Up, which was written by Jack Welch's assistant for 30 years. Her name is Roseanne Badowski. And so you're probably thinking, would somebody actually do that? Would they actually get a blind email and it says, buy this book, read this book, and do a book report on it? And the answer is no. Normal people wouldn't do that. Only a 5,200 percenter would. And so I think it's important when you're hiring people to look for 5,200 percenters and put hurdles in the hiring process that only a 5,200 percenter would jump through. If you have crappy employees, it's because you have a crappy interview process.
Oh, that's good. That is good. All right, let's go a couple more minutes and then we'll wrap up here. What's a good last concept?
Last concept I want to talk about, and this was not universal, but it was more than half, so it's worth talking about, and it's something I've embraced. And it's the principle of accountability. And since this project unfolded, I have been in a weekly accountability group for 90 minutes. And the reason is one of the billionaires I met is a guy named Bill George, a famous billionaire who ran a company called Medtronix. But he's been in a weekly accountability group for 37 years. He actually just wrote a book about it that came out a couple of months ago. It's called True North Groups. Hmm. So, yeah, I fully embrace this, so much so that for the last year and a half, I've actually been in two weekly accountability groups. One meets on the phone for 90 minutes on Wednesday morning, and one meets in person on Tuesday morning. And the objective of the meetings is very simple: to hold each other accountable to being great men. And that means your values, that means your marriage, that means your objectives, that means whatever. I mean, this morning we had a deep conversation for 90 minutes about what it means to be a vulnerable leader. And so I think accountability is huge. And Ben Franklin talked about this with his Junta groups. Think and Grow Rich talked about this with their mastermind groups. So I call them accountability groups. I'm thinking about making a business out of it because it's had such a huge impact on me. And what I found is more than half of the people that I met were in some form of accountability. You can't be your best self, if you don't have somebody holding you accountable that's outside of you. I can't work out fully unless I'm in the gym and my trainer is busting my ass. It's just not going to happen. And so it's worked wonders for me. It's worked wonders for the people that I met. Now, every single person I met had some form of accountability. They just didn't have it formal. Half of them had it formal. So that was my last nugget, and we're starting to get to wrap-up time. How do you want to go from here?
Yeah, no, that's good. Let me ask you one thing on the groups that you found there. So Bill George, like, is it really about everything? It's about any objective or any goal that they're working on, or is it more business oriented?
It's funny when you think about their group, and they talk about it in the book, but there's eight of them. 37 years, no divorces, unbelievable success. And they all started as regular guys in their 30s. And they've created billions of dollars in wealth. In their case, it covers really everything. Family, career, politics, everything. My in-person group, is the one I do in person, is more spiritual. And not spiritual in a religious sense, but spiritual in a purpose sense. You know, why are we here? My Wednesday group is more about goals. We focus, we're strictly about accountability toward goals, which is great. So I've got both bases covered. But, you know, in 37 years, you can imagine, Yannick, that they're going to cover a lot of topics.
Yeah. Now, have you found in-person versus virtually to be a difference?
No difference. We actually use Skype conference where you can see. So there's no difference. The only thing is when you're in person, we have a no electronics policy. When you're on Skype, who knows what people are doing because you can't see their hands. Maybe we should have the camera on their hands. But yeah, I think we live in a distracted world, information overload, and I think one of the reasons why accountability groups work is because it's the only 90-minute period that people have where they're not bombarded with technology. And I think it's killing society. I mean, it's crazy. Just at my friend's house this weekend, and his four-year-old was texting. And I said, why'd you give a phone to your four-year-old? And he said, well, I want him to get used to electronics. And I thought that was insane. I mean, you could start electronics when you're 20 and get used to it from 20 to 21. You don't have to get used to it from 4 to, you know, you get the point.
Yeah.
Crazy. So another thing that was born out of this whole project, which I know you had one in your hands, is I realized that these people knew what their life was about, knew what their purpose was, knew what their values were. And so I decided to create this thing called a family placemat. And, you know, it sits on our dining room table, and on it are things like your values and your vacation plans and your family rules and our wedding vows and our coat of arms for the family and our family sayings, quotes, Ben Franklin's thing. So from this project was born a lot of other things that have helped me manifest, like the accountability group, et cetera.
Yeah, and that's familyplacemat.com, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you set up a whole site for that. And yeah, I thought that was a really cool idea, and I really loved it.
Yeah. But all of that is really so the project happened, which led to business finishing school, and then a component of that is family placemat. I don't want to confuse everybody, but I will say this. One of the things I want to leave you with is the difference between successful people and extremely successful people is that extremely successful people say no to almost everything. And that's something that Warren Buffett says. I want to leave you with, take the nuggets out of here. Say no to all the crap in your life that doesn't matter. I think, unfortunately, too many of us are addicted to yes, and we're just yes addicts. We run around saying yes to everything. And we don't realize that no gets us a hell of a lot further than yes does. Be careful of information overload. I get teased because I have a phone that only dials, my cell phone. It broke recently, so I got another one. I had to find a it's a 2001 model. But all it does is dial, which is awesome. So I'm not walking around with my children texting. So I wanted to share that Warren Buffett quote. I think it's powerful.
Yeah, how do you know what to say no to and what to say yes to?
Well, first, figure out what your purpose is, which we talked about. Then understand what your values are. I call it the values doorman, or the doorman principle is the name of the principle, which we've trademarked. Once you understand what your values are, have an imaginary doorman in your life, and don't let anybody in your business or in your personal life that doesn't value what you value. I will assert that every single problem that you've ever encountered and I've ever encountered started when we let somebody past our doorman that didn't value what we value. And it's always the same response. Yeah, but I thought they were going to bring in a lot of sales. Right. Or yeah, but you know, she was good in bed. That's why I married her and destroyed my life. You know, when you choose opportunity over values, it's always, always a bad decision long term.
Do you rank your values?
I do. My first is simplicity.
and then so that matches up against anything that you do. And
yeah, if it's complex, I'm not going to do it, period. And, you know, it's a battle because, you know, I have to clean my life out occasionally, but I have really strong values around simplicity with my family. I recently spent time at a friend of mine's house on a Saturday. It was 2 weekends ago in New York. Saturday afternoon, he's got 3 kids under 10. It was total chaos. Each one of the 3 kids had 3 separate events. This is a Saturday. This is when you're at the time to teach your kids values. And all I heard was the husband and wife arguing over who was taking this one to baseball practice and who was taking this one to soccer practice and who had piano lessons and what kid just showed up and I can't find my uniform. And I'm like, let me get this straight. You've got 9 separate events to go to, unrelated, with 3 kids. Are you insane? And they said, well, that's what life's like nowadays. So I think you have to be at cause in your life. And at cause is when you're not doing what everyone else is doing. You're actually doing what needs to be done because it aligns with your purpose and your values.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's a great spot to end on because I think if you want to do, I've always said, you want to do what everybody else does. You want to follow the norm. You want to follow the mediocre majority. That's where you're going to end up. It's only the people that are willing to do what's extraordinary will end up with extraordinary success in their mm-hmm. lives.
This has been fun. You ask good questions. I want to implore whoever's listening to go to businessfinishingschool.com, sign up. It's inexpensive. All of the things that we talked about will be practically, from a practical perspective, put into your life as habits. And it's fun. If you ever want to do this again, Yannick, let me know. I'd love to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to have to have you back. And yeah, businessfinishingschool.com. I mean, it's like I said, it's so underpriced. Actually, you and I had a conversation about that last week, and we're talking about the different price points. So until Rick takes my advice, it's going to be underpriced, and it's well worth signing up right now. It's it'll have a tremendous effect. You'll tell me some of the results from some of the clients who've gone through it, and it's been extraordinary. And as you can tell, Rick has just an immense amount of expertise, not only from running his own businesses, but then he's just this lifelong student and always taking what's working from people that have gone above and beyond where he is even. And he's pretty far along. So, Rick, thank you so much.
And I want to shout out to you. Thank you for continuing to push people to be the best that they can be. I think everything that you do underneath it all is a big heart. So thank you for continuing to push.
Thanks. Yeah, you and I are in alignment with that, working with for entrepreneurs and creating something that matters. All right. So I'd also suggest people check out. You have your own personal site where you got your own simple rules that are listed that I think are great for people to lead a more engaged life. And you can check out Rick's site also at ricksapio.com. RickSapio. .com and then click on his simple rules at the bottom, and you know, I think you'll find some good stuff there. So, Rick, once again, thank you, and I'm sure you and I will be talking soon about the stuff.
Awesome. Thanks, Yannick. I enjoyed it. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Bye.
Take care.
Wow. So hopefully you enjoyed that special episode of the Carrot Cast. I know it's a little bit different than the normal ones. We took a little break from us running at that time. And hopefully you enjoyed Yannick and his conversation with Rick. And like I said, there was some amazing, amazing wisdom that I wanted to share with you guys that I got a lot out of when I heard that episode many, many years ago. And that's timeless information, you know, that's timeless stuff. And ever since then that I heard it, I think it was in 2011 or 2012, I first heard that, and I listened to it once or twice a year since then. And I've really started to adopt certain things into my life. And hopefully you can pick one or two things yourself from this episode of the Carrot Cast that you can adopt into your life. You know, whether it's living your life in seasons, like Rick had talked about, whether it's really looking at the way that you're building your businesses and making sure you're not working in your businesses, but working on your businesses and owning businesses, not running them. Okay, that's a big, big, big differentiator from those who are successful, from the people who are uber successful, okay? The billionaires, the multi-millionaires tend to own businesses, not work in them, not run them. Okay, and that's a massive, massive difference, guys and gals. So if you're looking to really achieve your goals over the long term, and you're looking to really gain freedom, you're going to probably have to move to from the employee side of your business to the owner side. And by owner, it doesn't mean that you own all the shares. It means you are not an active daily part in your business. And that's something that is a goal of mine with some of my businesses, but I really, really, really love what we're doing with Carrot. So that's not a goal of mine at the moment, right? So find other things. Go out there and make find a retreat for yourself. It doesn't have to be an island like Richard Branson. It doesn't have to be a big mansion. It could be a little lake house. It could be you just go find a hotel that you really like somewhere, and once or twice a year, you go to that same hotel for 3 or 4 days, okay? For myself and my family, we bought a townhouse on a golf course in Southern Oregon, and we go there in the holidays, but also we spent an entire month there this summer. Okay, so find the things in this podcast that resonate with you, work some of them into your life, work some of them into your business, and go out there and make yourself a more effective entrepreneur. When you're a more effective entrepreneur, you're going to make more things happen. You're going to make your bigger impact in the world, and that is why you're here. You're not here to make money, y'all. You can't take money with you. Okay, the money helps amplify who you already are and helps amplify your mission to make a difference in this world. Okay. So go out there and make that difference. Grow your real estate business. Be more efficient with your time. Have more fun with your business. Be more grateful for what you're doing. And share this episode of the Carrot Cast with anything that you think, anyone that you think will get a lot of benefit from it. Okay, and while you're at it, guys, go to iTunes, go to Google Play, go to wherever you're listening to this and give us a rating, give us a review. That helps us in a big way. It spreads our message to more people. It lets us know what we're doing is good stuff, or even give us feedback. If we're not doing a great job, let me know what you'd love to hear from the Carrot Cast, and we will totally take that into account and dive in. Okay, listen to other episodes of the Carrot Cast at carrotcast.com. And guys and gals, go out there and make your greater difference in this world today. Thanks.